One of the things that I notice when I read them, though, is I look at how old people were, and Sproul was 92, but I noticed a woman here who died who was 36, and that makes me sad because I know that that was before her time and something went wrong there. I did notice, too, on the front page of the paper, did any of you see this? This one here? Did you see that? This couple in Wabasha was in their 90s. He was 91, Joe, and Alta was 88. And he died on Valentine's Day. And they took her, she was at Mayo, they took her to go and see him. And then he died, and then she died that night, about 7 or 8 or 9 hours later. And so I thought, wow. And I thought, you know, if you're married, it must be one of the most difficult things in the world to lose a spouse. I suppose if you have children, that would maybe even be more difficult. Some of you know exactly what I'm talking about. I know of those of you in this room who've lost a spouse, some of you have lost a child, how horribly difficult that must be. And I thought, how sweet for this couple to never really have to live with the grief of that experience. And you might wonder why I'm sharing this, and the reason is that death is always hard, and for these people that I'm talking about, it was difficult. But it would be even more difficult to suffer for years with an illness, maybe with lots of pain, and then die, or maybe even be more difficult to be dying because you were a criminal and you got the death sentence maybe, and maybe you were even repented and wished that you could redo your life over again, but you can't because they're going to put you to death because of your crimes. And then I thought, how much more difficult yet to be put to death for crimes that you did not commit. To know that as you go to that place, I know it's happened, hasn't happened to me, obviously I'm still here, you're still here. But to go to that place where you're going to give up your life now and your life's going to be taken and you're humiliated because you're being committed, you're being punished and killed for a crime you did not commit, and that was the fate of Jesus on his road to the cross. Matter of fact, even worse than that, Jesus went to the cross not for crimes that he committed, but for crimes that we committed. And then I thought, how much worse would it be not just to have your life taken and you're innocent, but to have it taken in the most cruel form of punishment possible, crucifixion. The worst imaginable death might be to go alone, to go in the worst possible way, to go and be innocent of a crime and to be murdered in that by the beings that you created. It's so easy to underestimate the catastrophic evil that happened when Jesus was killed on the cross. We become almost numb to it because we've heard about it. We sing about the blood and we don't stop long enough, like I did this week, to say this was the most horrific evil ever in the universe. And Jesus didn't have to do it. He chose to, and he wasn't killed for his crimes. I'm just when I get a speeding ticket. It's justifiable when I get one because I'm speeding sometimes. But Jesus was killed for crimes he did not commit. Imagine if you have children, what you were feeling if they were up for capital punishment and they did not even commit the crime. In today's text, the crowd yells at Jesus, crucify him, and they beg for Barabbas to be let free. I want you to experience the reading of John 18, 28 through 40 with this video.
Early in the morning, Jesus was taken from Caiaphas' house to the governor's palace. The Jewish authorities did not go inside the palace, for they wanted to keep themselves ritually clean in order to be able to eat the Passover meal. So Pilate went outside to them and asked,
"What do you accuse this man of?"
"We would not have brought him to you if he had not committed a crime."
"Then you yourselves take him and try him according to your own law."
"We are not allowed to put anyone to death."
This happened in order to make come true what Jesus had said when he indicated the kind of death he would die. Pilate went back into the palace and called Jesus.
Are you the king of the Jews?
Does this question come from you? Or have others told you about me?
Do you think I'm a Jew? It was your own people and the chief priests who handed you over to me. What have you done?
My kingdom does not belong to this world. If my kingdom belonged to this world, my followers would fight to keep me from being handed over to the Jewish authorities. No. My kingdom does not belong here.
Are you a king, then?
You say that I am a king. I was born and came into the world for this one purpose. To speak about the truth. Whoever belongs to the truth listens to me.
And what is truth?
Then Pilate went back outside to the people and said to them,
I cannot find any reason to condemn him, but according to the custom you have, I always set free a prisoner for you during the Passover. Do you want me to set free for you the king of the Jews?
They answered him with a shout. Barabbas was a bandit.
The trial of Jesus Christ is probably the single most horrific injustice ever that occurred in the history of the world. The Creator was maligned by the creation. The friend of sinners was considered to be an enemy. The judge of the earth was ruled over by fickle rulers. The exalted Lord of glory was mocked and spit upon. The one who never even intimated a lie was called a liar and lied about. And the one who never sinned was condemned a sinner. Last week we contrasted the actions of Peter and his denying virtually everything that he came to be known by as a follower of Christ. We contrasted Peter's denial with the Jesus Christ not denying anything that he was for and about. In between last week and this week, in chapter 18, we've been preaching through, Mark lets us know that the charge that Caiaphas places on Jesus Christ is that he claims to be the Son of God. But we move in John chapter 18 directly from Caiaphas' house over to Pilate's residence, where we see Jesus on trial before Pilate. This week, the passage for us, John 18, 28 through 40, contrasts the ones who compromise truth with the one who comprises truth. The Pharisees, the Jews, the religious rulers, Pilate, they were in a place of compromise. They were compromising whatever they could to accomplish their objectives. And Jesus was the one who was on trial, and he was the one who comprises truth. We want to look at several of the traits of religious hypocrites and contrast that with some of the traits of Jesus Christ. Number one, religious hypocrites compromise for personal gain. So why Pilate? Why did the Jews have to drag Jesus off to Pilate? Why couldn't they end this themselves? Why didn't they just say, well, Jesus is bad and he claimed to be the Son of God, and so why didn't they find some creative way to kill him? And the truth is, the Jews were largely prohibited from doing the death penalty. Now, If you read about that, you'll find that that was prohibited, and yet there are those cases where it looks like occasionally they tried to do it. For example, if you recall the woman caught in adultery in John chapter 8, they were picking up stones to stone her, which would have killed her. And so it seems that the Jews had an ulterior motive. Pilate was not always in town, and so they wanted to catch him while he was there. And the Passover would mean that Pilate was coming to town. He was the governor. He was the procurator of the area. And one of the reasons that Pilate would come to town is if he ever expected that there was going to be troubles. Now, you know enough about the Jews to know that in this New Testament time, they were a problematic, troublesome, quarrelsome people. They were constantly giving grief to the leaders, and whenever you got a lot of them in town, like for the Passovers or the festivals, several hundred thousand extra Jews would show up in the city, and it usually was a cause for trouble. And so Pilate would come to town when there were festivals like the Passover, and with the large influx of Jews into the city, he was there with his troops to keep them in order. As a matter of fact, they took Jesus to the Praetorium, and Praetorium is actually a word for a large group of soldiers. But because when Pilate came to town, he brought the Praetorium with him, when they took Jesus to where Pilate was, they called it the Praetorium because it was the place where there were lots and lots of soldiers. They went there early, the text tells us. They went to his house and it was early. Could have been as early as 3 a.m., probably was around 6 o'clock in the morning. First thing in the morning, they couldn't wait to get Jesus over to Pilate where they would try to get the death penalty for Jesus Christ. They wanted their dirty work done before the crowds got wind of it. The crowds loved Jesus, and there were many that were trumped up to deny and say false things about him and lie about him, but many loved him. And so early in the morning, they dragged Jesus off to Pilate's house. And notice they could not go into Pilate's place because it would have defiled them for the Passover. Isn't that remarkable? They couldn't go into a Gentile house because if they went into a Gentile house, they'd be unclean for 7 days. And so if they went in there, they couldn't celebrate the Passover. They couldn't perform the religious ceremonies that were common to this time. So imagine their compromise for personal gain. They wanted Jesus gone so badly that they would take him over to Pilate. And we'll talk about why they wanted Pilate to kill him and not do it themselves in just a minute. But while they're there, they couldn't go in his house because they'd be defiled religiously and they couldn't perform the ceremony. Right? So they're being careful to not be impure for the ceremony while they're conniving how to kill the Son of God. And we, all of you, and you're shaking your heads and you're thinking, that's just ridiculous. And sometimes we find ourselves there too. And we find ourselves being very careful to keep the religious tradition. But in reality, we are living in a way that dishonors God greatly and find ourselves merely keeping the appearance of religion while really not following it with our heart. Religious hypocrites maintain the appearance of religion. How ironic that they were so careful to maintain the appearance while they were killing the Son of God. So we're at Pilate's house. Pilate was the fifth governor of Judea. He was appointed by Tiberius, who was in Rome, and we'll hear more about Tiberius in a minute. And Pilate was known to be a proud, arrogant, and cynical, sarcastic ruler. He also was weak and vacillating. He would change his mind if the winds of change blew in a different direction. His rule was marked with cruelty and insensitivity. So if the Jews wanted Pilate to take someone out by crucifixion, he might be a guy that they could play on his affections and work on that. So they took Jesus to Pilate to get him the death sentence of crucifixion. Pilate was not very popular with the Jews, but now they needed him because they wanted him to do his dirty work. Pilate one time brought in these icons, poles with flags on them with silver images of the rulers of the Roman territory that they paraded through the cities, and the Jews thought that was idolatrous, and it was, and they refused to allow that to happen, and so they revolted, and they went to Pilate and said, if you put those through the cities, we're going to rebel, and we're going to make a big stink. And Pilate said, then bring it on, and I'll kill anybody who rebels. And the Jews said, okay, you're on. And Pilate was afraid that they were serious. He didn't want that on his charge, and so he pulled those icons from the city. Pilate's demise probably came when some Samaritans were trying to climb a hill to find some artifacts from previous worship in their religion. and Pilate was chasing them down, killed a whole bunch of them that were climbing that hill, these pilgrims, and the word got to Tiberius, who was the ruler that appointed Pilate. And so Tiberius called him out of Jerusalem, out of that area, back to Rome to talk to him about what happened, probably to punish him. While Pilate was traveling from Jerusalem back to Rome, Tiberius died, and we don't know what happened to Pilate. Some say he was banished from the territory. Some say he was executed for his crimes against the Jewish people. Some say he committed suicide, and one rumor even has it that he was so overcome with guilt, becoming convinced that he sentenced the Son of God to death, that he killed himself. But Pilate disappears off the scene. But for right now, Pilate is the friend of the Jews, even though they hated him because they needed him, because they wanted to crucify Jesus. It's interesting that Pilate actually is the first one to really ask the right question. Pilate comes to him, talks to Jesus, and talks to the Pharisees. The Pharisees give an evasive answer. You realize that Caiaphas determined the reason that Jesus should die was because he claimed to be the Son of God. We learned that from the previous Gospels. But they go to Pilate, and Pilate says, what has he done? And they say, well, he's a criminal. If he's not a criminal, he wouldn't have wasted our time. They don't tell him that he's the Son of God because Pilate could care less if he claims to be God. So they tell Pilate that Jesus is claiming to be a king, which was true. Jesus was claiming to be a king. And this maybe would interest Pilate in such a way that Pilate would talk to Jesus to find out if he really was pretending to be a king or if he was one. Religious hypocrites will use any excuse to accomplish their objective. You know, if you want to rebel against God, just pick a reason. You talk to lost people about God and they have lots of reasons why they don't want to follow God or why they wouldn't give their life to Christ. And someone said it, and it's true. If you don't want to follow God, if you don't want to be a believer, if you want to rebel against the Lord of the universe, any excuse will do. Well, I don't want to follow God because I don't know how people who are innocent could suffer. I don't want to follow God because I don't think there's a hell. And the religious leaders bring Jesus to Pilate, and they have to change the very reason they wanted him killed to suit their objectives. Pilate knew that Jesus was not guilty. Matthew chapter 27, verse 18, Matthew tells us that Pilate knew they delivered Jesus over to him because of envy. So why did they bring Jesus to Pilate? Why didn't they just accuse him of adultery? The charges that they were using are trumped up anyways. Why didn't they just call him an adulterer and go stone him in the backyard? And the answer is because Pilate, if he killed him, for being a seditionist or a rebel or someone who should be killed by the Roman law, would crucify him. And the Jewish leaders knew that if someone was crucified, there's no way they could be a Messiah. There's no way that he could be the Son of God because God's curse was upon the one who was crucified. Deuteronomy chapter 1, verse 22 says, if anyone is found guilty of an offense deserving the death penalty and is executed, and you hang his body on a tree, hang him up for all to see, a dead body crucified on a tree, you are not to leave his corpse in the tree overnight, but you are to bury him that day, because anyone hung on a tree is under the curse of God. So the religious leaders who hated Jesus weren't satisfied just with having him out of the way or gone or dead. They wanted him crucified to hang his body up on a tree to show to the whole world that this person is under the curse of God. So anybody even remotely thinking maybe Jesus was telling the truth, maybe he's the Son of God, any person remotely interested in Jesus as a Savior would say, well, it's impossible because he was crucified, and we know that God curses anyone who is hung on a tree. And how ironic that that's true, but the fact that God cursed Jesus for your sin and for mine, however he was innocent, is the very reason that we can be saved. They wanted to ensure that any claims of messiahship would go away when Jesus died. Pilate is aware of the trumped up charges against Jesus. He takes Jesus inside to question him. And he says, okay, are you the king of the Jews? And Jesus says, are you asking this on your own, or have others told you about me? It sounds sort of evasive, doesn't it? But it's a real question. It's the right question. And what Jesus is really asking him, he's really saying, are you asking me if I'm a king and I'm a threat to Rome? Are you asking me for yourself? Are you asking me if I am a threat to you and your kingship? Or are you asking me because others have told you that I claim to be a king in a different way than that? What are you really asking me? And Jesus clarifies the question. And Pilate has determined, is he asking if Jesus is the king of the Jews or if he is a king about to overthrow the government? Jesus is not being evasive. He's clarifying the question so that Pilate and him can be on the same page. In contrast to the religious hypocrites who change the truth and the reasons to meet their own selfish ends, Jesus, the one who comprises truth, helps to clarify truth. That's what we should be. We should be those persons who help to clarify truth. So Jesus, asked by Pilate if he's a threat, Jesus says, are you asking me or have others told you about me? And Jesus says, oh yes, I am a king. Jesus, for Pilate though, was a problem because Jesus wasn't the usual spiteful, bitter rebel that he was used to. The average rebel probably coming into the presence of Pilate, who was on the verge of being crucified, probably by the time you get to Pilate and you're charged in this situation, there's not a whole lot of hope for you. And so the average rebel would come in with his last chance to spit in the emperor's face, to spew his venom, to say what a horrible regime Rome was and how awful it was and how I'd gladly give my life for what I believe in. And the average rebel would come in with a vengeance to give his last sort of spew, his last venomous, rebel, rebellious spiel. And Jesus says, okay, now let's clarify. What exactly are you asking me here? And Pilate clarifies and Jesus says, yes. Yes, I am a king. But my kingdom is not of this world. Imagine the difference for Pilate to have someone who not only speaks with authority, who not only is actually wanting to get to the bottom of the issue, but is coming back in a calm sense and says, by the way, I'm here because it's for this very reason that I was born. Which I think must have all the more settled once and for all in the mind of Pilate. They had nothing on Jesus. And he stands there and he's dumbfounded. He can't understand it. Jesus isn't bitter at all. Jesus is saying it's why I came. He's saying he's a king. And the sentence that Pilate says is so wonderful. He says to him, he walks up and he says, what have you done? What'd you do? Isn't that what the question is begged to be asked for Pilate? He doesn't get this. It doesn't make any sense to him. He's not a rebel. He's not mean. He's healed people. He's heard the stories. These Jews hate him and they got people out screaming for his removal. And he walks in. The Jews can't come in. Nobody's there because they won't defile themselves. And Pilate walks up and he says, what have you done? And Jesus just tells him, well, I have a kingdom. And my kingdom is not of this world, because if my kingdom were, then my servants would fight. No doubt Pilate knows that when they went to arrest Jesus, he probably knows that one of the disciples grabbed a sword, knocked off a guy's ear, and Jesus said, don't do that. He put the ear back on Pilate. Knows that. Pilate knows that the very fighting that would be typical to a rebel was not common to Jesus. And so Jesus says, if my kingdom was of this world, my servants would fight so that I wouldn't be handed over to the Jews. As it is, my kingdom does not have its origin here. And so Pilate says, so you are a king. And I think Pilate believed that he was. Jesus does not hide behind any pretense. Jesus is not ashamed of who he is. He tells Pilate exactly who he is. In contrast with those who are hypocrites, the one who comprises truth helps to clarify truth and does not hide behind pretense. The most honest answer in the text is, yes, I am a king. And then there's this most interesting discussion on truth. And Jesus says in the last part of his last comments to Pilate, he says, everyone who is of truth listens to my voice. Everyone who listens to truth. Who are those people who listen to truth? Well, they're the followers of Jesus Christ. Because listening in this verse implies obedience and understanding and adherence to those things that Jesus says. If you're of truth, if you love truth, if you come to truth, you listen to my voice. And so, children, if you're at home with your moms and dads and your mom or dad says to do something and you don't do it, what do you say? You say, well, little I got to think of a name of nobody who's here, but little person, child, won't listen to me. What are you saying? You're saying he or she will not do what I say. And so Jesus says, everyone who is of the truth, who claims the truth, who knows the truth, who can see the truth, everyone who is that person, they listen to me. And Pilate, knowing that he very easily will compromise truth, knowing that he will do what is the most convenient, he says, what is truth? What is truth? Jesus valued truth more than personal gain. It seems actually that the conversation that Jesus had with Pilate is almost as much to help Pilate to understand, almost sort of a pleading with him to say, yes, I am a king. Yes, it's why I'm here. No, I'm not going to overthrow your throne. I have a kingdom not of this world. I came for that purpose. And if you want to talk about it, those who listen to me, those who obey me, those who understand the truth that I talk about, they're the ones in my kingdom. And Pilate, maybe that would be of interest to you. Maybe you should be someone who listens to me, who follows what I say, who is one that is of truth. And Pilate, in frustration, not knowing how to handle this, knows he's in a really big pickle, because if he lets Jesus go, the crowd's going to be in an uproar. When the crowd goes in an uproar, word's going to get to Rome. Word gets to Rome. Then Pilate's not doing his job. And if Pilate's not doing his job, then he gets replaced. So Pilate's in quite the quandary. He's intrigued by Jesus. He believes that he is innocent. He believes probably that Jesus knows something about truth or is truth, but does not know what to do. And so Pilate, in frustration, goes, what's truth? Why does he say that? Because he's about to do the very thing that he can't stand. He's about to do what he knows is wrong. And while he's wrestling with looking and staring truth in the face and probably believing that Jesus Christ is truth, he doesn't know what to do, and he's probably going to condemn him to be crucified because he doesn't have any options here. And he's like, oh, give me a break. What's truth? I don't know. And he walks out in a last-ditch effort, thinking that these Jews would never want. It says abandoned in the text that we read, and the word in the Greek is a lestes, a criminal. It's the word for a rebel. It's the word for someone who caused rebellious sedition, someone who caused an uprising, who got people killed, who were trying to lead people to overthrow the government. That's the word for Barabbas, a bandit, a lestes. And Pilate's thinking, I know what I do. I can release one prisoner at Passover time. That's a common thing that I do. And so I'll pick Barabbas. He's like the worst of the worst. And I'll go out there and I'll give him an option. I'll say, okay, you can have Jesus, the King of the Jews, who I think is innocent, but he didn't say that. Or you can have Barabbas, the guy who goes around killing people, who's terrorized some of your very families. They hate Jesus so much, they say, Barabbas, Barabbas, Barabbas. Crucify the Messiah. In contrast with people who compromise the truth, the one who comprises truth sacrifices self for the mission. How many of the followers of Jesus Christ in the years to come would sacrifice themselves for the mission like Jesus did? The mission that he came for, the reason he came for this purpose, to give his life, to redeem all those who would believe. And those who love the truth, those who clarify the truth, those who value truth more than personal gain as we ought to, will sacrifice themselves for the mission. Have you sacrificed a relationship because of the gospel? Many of you have. Have you sacrificed a grade in class for the gospel? Have you sacrificed a job for the mission? Pilate underestimated the Jewish hatred of Jesus, and they chose Barabbas. Interestingly, Barabbas is an Aramaic name, and Barabbas means the son of the father. The name Barabbas, Aramaic, means the son of the Father. And so the Jews have a choice. They can choose the son of the Father, Barabbas, who's a murderer, a seditionist, a rebel, a rebellious person who probably rightfully deserved crucifixion. Or they could choose the true son of the Father, the Son of God, and they choose Barabbas. What a marvelous contrast of good and evil in John chapter 18. Peter, who denies Christ repeatedly, struggling to be obedient, denies Christ and the rooster crows, and he goes out and weeps bitterly. And Jesus looks at him, and that relationship is later restored because Jesus ran to Christ and not away from him. And then we turn over to the house of Pilate, the Jews outside, religious hypocrites. All they can think of is getting Jesus out of their way to make their life better because Jesus was wrecking their way of life. And the hypocrisy of the charges they brought and the place they took him and the crucifixion they longed for him to have with Pilate, who struggles with truth and what is it, and Jesus, who stands firm and confident all the way through, saying, this is fine, do your best work because it's why I'm here in the first place. What a contrast. Romans 12:21 says, don't be conquered by evil, but conquer evil with good. And that's what Jesus did, and those who condemned him were evil. If you're honest, you see yourself in the traits of those who compromise. We as believers struggle to be sold out, to be sold out to the one who comprises truth. Jesus modeled an unwavering commitment to the truth in the presence of horrible hypocrisy. I pray that we could do the same. Some of you right now in your life maybe are making that decision. Maybe if you think about it, you're in church, you realize that God is out there, God made the universe, you are His creation, you have a debt to pay for Him as you honor Him with your life and return to Him the honor and glory due His name. And yet the attraction of things apart from God are so appealing and so delightful that in reality with your life, you deny constantly the Jesus Christ who made you because the choice of your way of life is more important to you than following God. That's what the Pharisees did and the Sadducees and the religious leaders. I think the text would have us ask today, what side of this fence am I on? Am I looking for excuses to not follow Christ? Am I looking for ways to say, well, I really don't have to follow Christ, I don't care what happens to Him? Or am I saying, no, I want to be one who does not compromise the truth. I want to sacrifice myself for the mission. I want to value truth more than my personal gain, because if I come to Christ, if I claim truth, if I be one who is in the truth, it's going to cost me. It's going to cost me this relationship, or it's going to cost me this thing in my life I don't want to give up. Ask yourself that question today. Which side of this truth debate am I on? Let's pray. Heavenly Father, I thank You that You sent Jesus on a mission of truth to sacrifice His life on our behalf. Father, I pray that You would use the gospel to impact our lives, to call us to dedicated service of the One who made us. And Father, I pray that You would forgive us for when we have compromised. In Jesus' name, amen.